Warning, this game's setting revolves around an active Middle East combat zone and contains references to extreme violence, graphic content, and other mature themes. Listener discretion is advised.
The Rancor's Brothel presents...
Want some whiskey in your water, sugar in your tea? What's all these crazy questions they're asking me? The craziest body that could ever be. So turn on the lights, cause I don't wanna see. My atonement has come. My atonement has come. That ain't the way to have fun, son.
Iconoclast, a campaign of horrors modern and ancient.
Choking from the smell of stale perfume and the cigarette you're smoking. That scared me half to death. Open up the window, let me catch my breath. My atonement has come. My atonement has come.
So for the editor and possibly the audience, we're down one player this evening. I don't know if any of this will make it into the recording, but we're kind of doing a catch-up session. This is for our own benefit, but also we'll do a little bit of playing in here. I'm sure Jeff, the editor, will make it all sound good.
Something like that.
So we're kind of just reviewing some notes so they can start planning. Offline, the conversation has kind of been, they now have, as of yesterday in game, they now have their IDs so they can attempt to insert into Mosul. Obviously, with them looking for so many on-site clues, things that they haven't been able to figure out through the Peshmerga or through the CIA or through other contacts. Now they theoretically have the opportunity to insert if folks want to do that. Obviously, who would you send? What would you send? We're also kind of doing a general review of clues and trying to understand some plot and possibly figure some stuff out. So that's kind of what we're doing this evening. Somewhat low key, but we'll see what happens. I haven't even got dice out yet, so we'll see if I even need them. Anyway, Jeff, you were asking about Operation Conquest and Mosul and how far Rassam's was away, etc.
Well, we were talking about survivors from Rassam's.
Correct. We've established narratively that there were survivors, and Saidegi would, from the Peshmerga, I think that's the right contact, would have let you know who they are. For the players, if there's someone you're interested in looking at, and I didn't explicitly kill them, I think I said this at the end of the last episode, if I didn't explicitly kill them on camera, literally, in sort of the opening gambit, I'll let you look into them, if that makes sense. If you want to look them up, you can find out information about them. So we just need to review that episode and make sure it's not somebody, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's Tamir who's dead, Gokhan is dead, Rassam is dead, and we were kind of up in the air about a couple of others.
Yeah.
I think I killed at least one more.
And none of us bothered to go back and listen.
No, absolutely not.
My biggest question is, and there's like, I don't mean anything bad about this. I think it is maybe a good thing to do, but legitimately, what could we learn from them that we don't already know? From these survivors, legitimately asking, like, what if we were to go down that path, what would that look like?
More details about maybe what actually happened off camera.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. We know that we saw a cloud of black stuff come up and tear people apart.
Mm-hmm.
What else happened?
Yeah.
I would just say establishing timeline would be, if you're interested in establishing timeline after, you obviously know that the attack happened. You are presuming that something related to the attack is continuing to happen. Mm-hmm. You know that it was Al-Jabari put troops on Rassam's place.
Yes.
So, there is something that happened in the interim, but I don't know how much you've established. This is where I think laying out the timeline and remembering what you know is important.
And we were wondering whether the survivors would be in Mosul in a hospital, whether they got home, or I was just questioning the timeline. When Mosul was cut off by the Iraq and American military,
which have been Operation Conquest. What's it say, like Wikipedia sources, Jeff?
Well, all the news stories are March 24th.
Okay.
Which is the day after.
The day after it happened. But I'm pretty sure they were discovered on the 24th.
What was discovered?
The remains at Rassam's.
The 24th, yes. The 24th would have been when the outlaws would have arrived at Rassam's.
Yeah. So now I'm questioning, how did Al-Jabiri get his men out there?
So if it's helpful, I can see that looking at some other maps, I can see that as of April 1st, they coalition forces are in Kara and Mahana, which appear to be 100 kilometers south of Mosul.
Okay, so that's past Rassam's.
Correct.
Yeah.
Rassam's is like maybe 10 to 15 kilometers. This other map, and this is something that you could actually look up, because like I said, this timeline integrates actual historical events. And it says on March 24th, Iraqi forces advance westward toward the oil town of Karak, southeast of Mosul. Iraqi troops are reported to have recaptured several villages from ISIL, among them Garmandi, Kudila, and Kerberdan, I would say. That's where they're at as of late March, early April.
Okay, so if survivors did flee from Rassam's, they wouldn't have been picked up by military, because nothing had gotten that close yet.
Correct. You would, if that was your supposition, yes. The other thing that I was going to say is obviously that while there is the possibility that these guys could have run to the coalition, you would think that more than likely these guys have thrown their lot in with ISIL ideologically. Yeah. So they probably would have run back to Mosul. Also, it's closer. Yeah. Like, do you really want to run towards the coalition front lines, you know, with an AK-47 on your back in a truck flying an ISIL flag?
Right.
So, yes, if you are looking for survivors, they are likely in Mosul. Now, whether or not they're in a hospital, whether or not they died later, whether or not they were rehabilitated out on the front lines, there's no way for you to know at this point.
Okay. I think it would be a good use of time to literally map out who is going to Mosul and what are we doing, because I feel like there are a lot of stones to turn over in Mosul.
How are we getting into Mosul? And
right,
can the Peshmerga set us up inside of Mosul?
Right.
So there are a lot of different things you can investigate there. I personally, as your handler, also think it wouldn't be a bad idea for you to review notes and put together some sort of timeline or understanding. Because I think that, and it's just the episodic nature of the podcast, we come in and we do the exact same thing from where we picked up from last time, but there's quite a bit of information you've been fed, and I just want to make sure everybody knows where you're at. I don't think you're inherently missing anything, but I do want to make sure you're seeing the whole puzzle.
Right.
So I don't know if there's something you want to talk about or go through, but that was one of the reasons why I said it might be a good idea to review your notes and kind of think.
I don't think our notes are as good as you think they are.
Yeah, the moleskin isn't here.
Well,
true.
I do believe starting in episode one, I said that there would need to be there should be a moleskin.
There is one. He's just in Florida.
Oh, you're putting Daniel as your note taker?
He's taking significantly more notes than the rest of us.
That's fair.
As I'm editing, I am going back and taking notes, but I haven't gotten that far.
Okay. So then I'm leaving you alone from Baldur's Gate this weekend.
He's just going to sign in invisible so you don't know that he's playing Baldur's Gate.
I know. I'd do the same thing. Okay. So timeline-wise, right? You want us to review the timeline of information that we've gained.
Just, I think it'd be helpful to start putting, you've been given a lot, and I think that it seems like you've just moved sort of in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
I think way more of those pieces fit together to create a puzzle than you realize, just because of the nature of recording literally over, what, a year and a half or more at this point?
No. Has it been that long?
So I can't get this Nineveh out of my head.
Uh-huh.
And Nineveh was the ruins of a holy place.
It's the ruins of the old city of Nineveh.
Right.
Well, and the thing is it wasn't really ruins. ISIL made it ruins. It was ruins, but then they ruined
the ruins.
Right.
Okay.
Nineveh was a massive, we talked about that.
It was a big walled city.
It was a big walled city, and ISIL moved in and bulldozed everything.
Ah,
right. Mm-hmm. But specific within the attacks timeline, there was discussion about Al-Jabiri ordering troops into Nineveh.
Correct.
And I want to say that was right around the 30th.
That is roughly correct.
Basically a week after the incident. And that's when, and I think that's roughly the end of when we started getting details about attacks. And
30 March 2016, an intense firefight took place east of Asinaia district. I don't know
how to pronounce that. What did you
call me? I called you lots of things, but nothing right now. In the demolished ruins of Nineveh, police and military units were ordered out of the area by the head of Amn al-Dawla, ISIL counterintelligence in Mosul, Ahmed al-Jabiri.
Correct.
So the real question is, what would cause a firefight within the city of Mosul in that area? And why did it happen a week after this thing was released? If this thing is supposedly, we've had the conversations about this thing taking or converting soldiers. Converting men, converting boys.
Yeah, because there's men that keep going missing from the attacks and not being found.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And if this thing was ancient, being the ruins, or at least significantly old, like, could it have been the site of, like, what captured this thing to begin with?
Interesting. So
in the original Operation Bone Box stuff that you did receive, so I'm not telling you anything new, it's stuff right. You have on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
There were four SIGINT assets identified. So you have the incident at Rassam's on the 23rd.
Yep.
SIGINT assets identified four similar incidents on the 24th, four similar incidents on the 25th, three on the 26th, one on the 27th, one on the 29th. And you guys, I believe, were told April 1st or April 2nd is when you guys started as Operation Bone Box.
Yeah.
And at that time, they said no pertinent incidents had been reported as of the 1st of April, and no pertinent incidents had been reported outside Mosul.
It's fascinating.
So the last pertinent incident was reported prior to the firefight, and there were none after.
Interesting. You did start, you guys, your first, your briefing in Germany was April 1st. So that data would have been up to the minute, basically.
Got you.
At what point did they start finding body parts in the river?
April 6th? I don't know why that date sticks in my head. It's probably entirely wrong, but I don't know why.
This is such a unique book. It's really kind of interesting. Oh. Beginning the first incident you have in turn of sort of like human remains, like skinless arms and legs, limbs, etc. The first report is 12th of April.
12th.
Other questions I can answer or other discussion you want to have?
We could just talk through what we need to do in Mosul, but I don't think we're finished with timeline yet, though. I think there's more to discuss. I just don't know what it is.
Well, and again, I don't necessarily think it's all timeline either. It's sort of just putting pieces together. Mm-hmm. Like, you also have learned a lot from various textual resources about this thing, too. You know, just making sure you start putting things together.
Just throwing it out there. Do you guys have any theories as to why incidents have decreased? Have decreased
since when?
There's that precipitous drop immediately when it's released. You know, four incidents. Well,
we're not getting the same level of intelligence. I think that's part of it, too.
Interesting.
Because that's not necessarily, I mean, at what we've been kind of viewing has been like social media and trying to communicate with refugees. It's not like we're getting,
right,
you know, detailed incident reports by the minute, like he's talking about. It's like when we're looking into stuff, and what we have gotten has been kind of given like along those timelines, like that's finding out about the tank and those other people.
That's fair. It's also under the cover of war, too, the cloud of war, I guess you'd say, that this thing could operate.
Okay, so which river were the bodies found in?
I believe there's a river that runs straight through Mosul and runs out to the south, southeast. It's the Tigris, I think.
It is.
I'm just trying to map it. The Tigris. Gotcha.
It looks like it flows south-southeast out of Mosul and then turns almost completely south where it meets another river. I don't know if that's the Euphrates or not. I know the Tigris and the Euphrates do meet in Iraq. The other thing to your point, just to sort of throw some other thoughts out there, you have been in touch with the CIA as early as April 2nd.
Yeah, I think that was our first call.
It is now May 4th.
Okay.
So just you've been in the contact with the CIA for some amount of time.
About a month.
So it's not like that's the only SIGINT options out there. You've also been SIGINTing yourself.
Yeah, we've just had shit roles when it comes to the CIA for the most part.
I mean, you did attempt to kill al-Jabiri.
She
sent some cruise missiles, so she's been pretty pleased with your input from that.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I would be interested in trying to talk to the at least somebody from Rassam's, from the Rassam's house incident, the original, just to find out like what kind of communication is coming down from al-Jabiri about like what's going on. Like, I would love to know how they're talking about it.
I have a stupid question.
Probably not.
If Al-Jabiri ordered the police and the military out of Nineveh, who had the firefight?
That's my question.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier. Like, what focus group of people would be on the other side of the firefight if there was a firefight between ISIL combatants and who?
Well, that's the thing. He ordered the military out.
Right, after the firefight.
No.
Before.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Is that
he ordered them out prior and then there was a firefight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking to Cody and he is kind of chittily nodding.
Right. So which then goes to show that, in my opinion, Al-Jabiri's got
something else going on.
What? Mm-hmm. Which by something else going on means there's a reason why those people were sitting at Rassam's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have some inkling of what was there.
That's why I want to know what kind of communication about everything that's going on is coming from Al-Jabiri to anybody else. And wasn't Al-Jabiri part of sending the original group to Rassam's?
I don't think so.
You have
he's counterintelligence, not...
Amnawa is...
Yeah.
Daoud. I think that was the guy's name.
You have an ISIL org chart as one of the clues, if that's helpful.
He's the head of the religious police, right? Al-Hizba.
No, he's Amin al-Dawa, which is counterintelligence. So he's under the Secret Service. I think it was al-Hizba that was...
Like al-Hizba is the one that went initially.
Correct. Yeah. Al-Hizba is the one that went with Dabiq.
Right.
But I know you guys did ask at one point who would have ordered that.
Right. And we got that answer. I swear the guy's name was Daoud.
Daoud al-Said was an official for al-Hizba. The Dabiq folks were dispatched by Ali bin Hazma, who is basically someone in charge of Dabiq.
Okay, could you say that again? I'm sorry, I was writing.
Ali bin Hazma?
Yeah, Ali bin Hamza, sorry.
Hamza.
And this is the head of Dabiq?
It says an official of the recruiting magazine Dabiq. So someone, a senior editor, you know, editor-in-chief, something like that.
He is the one who Daoud al-Said set this up with?
Yeah, Daoud al-Said would have sent the al-Hizba team. Ali bin Hamza would have sent the video team for Dabiq to record it.
Okay.
So they would have had to have had some sort of communication to send. They're two different parts of the ISIL structure, so... It's an interdepartmental thing, so there had to have been cross-departmental communication.
Right.
One of those vacuum tubes sent the order.
Right. Somebody set that up.
Correct.
So somebody had to know something about what was at Rassam's.
Correct.
And was it these guys, or was it somebody else who pointed these guys at that place?
That I don't think you could extrapolate easily.
Yeah.
Looking at the ISIL org chart, these folks are, I mean, they're all under, but they're not. There's no real common denominator. Al-Hizba falls under the Military and Security Council, really kind of the Military Council. Al-Dawa falls under the Secret Service, which is the Security Council, and then Dabiq falls under the Communications Council. So,
yeah,
different branches of the same organization, but it's not like they fall in line or tree down to each other or are directly connected.
Do we know for a fact that Rassam doesn't have any other extended family in the area?
There was no mention of any other family. He had a dead wife. Well, I don't know, because he had a niece.
Can we look into also the other teams that are running down all those family members who immigrated to the Western countries? It's been a month.
Yeah. I mean, you could talk to Colonel Gwynn about that.
Just at the end of the... classified dossier on Rassam. Just some of the extended family members acted as U.S. intelligence assets, local translators, and liaisons from obviously the 50s to the 90s,
yeah.
Which is outside of a good outside. But like, why is his niece in here? Why was his niece there?
Yeah, what? You could ask. It's being run down by other folks, yeah. But yeah.
The real question is, where would the niece go? Or the butler? Would they? I assume they wouldn't go back to the city.
Well, if you remember that dynamic, let me find their names. Majid al-Muhandis was the gardener, mechanic, and sort of friend of Rassam.
Mm-hmm.
And Shatha was the 17-year-old sort of servant. Shatha had told those investigators that her uncle, I think it is, was like very connected to Rassam. You got the sense that Rassam and Majid are are incredibly closely connected. It was Shatha that was like,
Shatha.
She maybe even said something about getting her uncle away from here or something like that. Shatha right. was
the niece of the gardener guy, not Rassam.
Correct.
Oh, okay. And
very yep. ideologically connected to ISIL, which is one of the reasons why she wanted to talk to the Dabiq guys in the first place.
Yeah.
She was talking about how Rassam was summoning demons and stuff.
She was trying to throw Rassam under the bus.
Yeah. Correct.
She could be the reason why they knew shit was at Rassam's to begin with.
Okay, so this map is absolutely no help.
I'm sorry?
I'm trying to figure out where the hell bodies would have come from off of the Tigris, but most of this map is not in English.
Ironic that. Not a lot of English names in northern Iraq.
Yeah, but I mean, like, half of the words are in English on Google Map, but the rest are not.
Well, you know.
Like, I know this is a supermarket, but I don't know what the hell the name of it is. There's a mosque. There's a cemetery. There's a shopping mall. But I can't figure out where would the bodies have come from. I mean, the Tigris is fucking big.
Correct.
I mean, looking to see if it ran close to Nineveh, but it doesn't look like it does.
The map that I have shows that the ruins of Nineveh are... Goodness.
For some reason, I wanted to say they were like in the southeastern portion of Mosul.
No, they're northeast. It's a kilometer, maybe less from the river.
Mm-hmm. I'm
trying to measure. This says that distance is 1 kilometer. If I set that there. Yeah, I'd say the ruins of Nineveh are obviously huge. So like the far side of Nineveh is probably several kilometers from the river. But at its nearest point, you're talking about a few city blocks, like not massively far, like a kilometer is probably the distance from the river to Nineveh.
Yeah.
And I do believe the Tigris runs to the south. So theoretically, these bodies are flowing from Mosul or just outside Mosul.
So unless if it happened like Nineveh, it would have to flow through basically the entire city of Mosul.
Which is not unusual. Again, I know in my research, ISIL in a few places did in fact murder, I believe it was a university maybe. They murdered several hundred students and... I think they cast their bodies in the river and they floated downstream for miles.
Yeah.
Don't remember where it was, but I remember reading that in one of the books.
I remember reading that one of the big resistance forces was university students.
That is correct.
I cannot remember the name of them for the life of me, though.
Kitab al-Mosul, also known as the Mosul Battalions, an informal movement of students, former civil servants, and Kurdish spies resisting ISIL occupation.
Huh.
They were known to sow confusion at checkpoints and in questioning, help targeted populations, hide, escape, steal supplies, watch ISIL fighters' activities. They are thought to be mostly active near Mosul University, which would be just north of the Nineveh ruins.
It's also the site of one of the attacks, wasn't it? It happened at the university.
It's easier for you to flip through your...
I'm looking. I'm in it. I'm just trying to find it.
7 ISIL fighters were found skinned on the campus of Mosul University. Mm-hmm. 2 vanished, 2 were injured, and were transported to Al-Khanza Hospital.
How big are these districts?
Let me look on my map and see if it defines it. I would think that these districts are like neighborhoods. If the map that I'm looking at is denoting the districts, you're talking about anywhere from a handful of blocks to maybe 2 or 3 dozen. If all of these things on the map are districts in Mosul, there are 40 districts or so based on the map that I'm looking at. I think the districts are probably much smaller than you would think.
Probably.
Just thinking out loud, have we ever talked about the 25th of March, that attack, and the fighter who discovered the body was unable to give a statement? What does that mean to you, Jeff? Like, because it specifies in other incident reports that they were catatonic, and that is a reason to be unable to give a statement is catatonic. So I find it interesting that it's vague, but just thinking out loud. My personal pet theory is that Al-Jabari is the thing. It's possessed him. And now it gets its fill of blood from, you know, just war, regular war.
Well, I mean, if you want to go down that line of reasoning, I think that then, you know, contextual clues are probably what you've been learning about the father of war would probably either help support or deny some of that.
Ooh, I like this.
Do we have handouts about what we learned about the father of war? I honestly cannot remember.
I told you things.
Yeah, I know you did. and I couldn't remember if you had put any of that in.
Nope, you wrote them down.
Bullshit.
You did, because you made me repeat them several times, going very slowly. Now, I believe, because I am a smart handler, I wrote down which ones I actually gave you.
The slopes of Mount Artemi, tribe found demon father of war. I have really sketchy notes. Cult of Shagash.
Yeah, Cult of Shagash was one.
The cult in 1000 BCE. Yeah. Darum Axim, Godbinder.
We're at what day now?
It is May 4th.
It's May 4th.
So my pet theory is that the thing we're up against, the evil entity, has taken a vessel. I just kind of mentioned that. I think the vessel is Al-Jabari, just because it's thematically interesting. I have no evidence. But then Cody said, go back through and look through what we've talked about of the God of War and see whether or not, you know, those characteristics fit. I don't know if that's Cody saying we're going down the right path or the wrong path. I don't know. I've known Cody for decades. I can't read him. So.
He's always lying.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's insatiable. The God of War. The cult sacrificed people to him at night, and the sun kept it at bay.
Also the moon.
Yes.
I'm looking things up. The
generally useful.
Yeah. Human remains were found in the river on April 12th. The new moon was the 5th.
Right.
Or no, the 7th. I'm sorry. It's 5 days before the remains were found.
Which means it would have been the darkest at night.
Exactly.
That day.
We were looking up the new moon or the full moon before, and it didn't line up with anything. The new moon.
Ding, ding.
The new moon is what we need to be looking at.
Yeah.
So then.
And right now, the new moon is in 2 days.
Got ya.
Shit.
We need to
be in Mosul.
Yeah.
In 2 days.
Or maybe we shouldn't be in Mosul in 2 days.
Well, I mean, maybe you should wait 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, you guys don't want to be where the action is or what?
Oh, shit. Can we task satellites for Nineveh?
I don't know if we
depends
can.
On whose satellites, because we pissed off some people.
I know.
Yeah, but we made friends with the CIA. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what Irene gave us last.
She gave us more about the attack, the firefight on the 30th.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. She gave us the information about the firefight.
Was it more information that she gave us, or was she just reiterating what we already had?
Sometimes I do a little bit of column A. Sometimes I do a little bit of column B. So I don't know that I have that written down. Let me look.
Okay.
Yes, I do believe that she provided further details about that attack. I think that's what she did provide.
What were those further details, mm-hmm. Cody?
I'm pretty sure it's what you already know. I don't know that I provided. Okay. It says I gave you this clue on this page. Basically that investigations or looking into anything like this would have been controlled by Amin al-Dawa, any of these disappearances or anything else.
Which is just the name of the ISIL counterintelligence organization.
Correct, which is Al-Jabiri's.
Yeah, sometimes I struggle with determining, like, are these names of people or names of, like, organizations?
Correct.
Yeah.
Al-Dawa is ISIL's counterintelligence organization.
Which Al-Jabiri heads.
Which would have been headed up by Al-Jabiri.
Right.
And again, the firefight at the Nineveh ruins.
But we already had that on the details.
True, but I think she's able to sort of fill in. Basically, there is no further investigation after that. The investigation has been concluded as of that, from all appearances.
The entire ISIL counterintelligence regime's investigation.
Yeah, sort of into these attacks or whatever the case may be.
Did she have any information on who was involved in the attack?
I don't know that you asked, but I think that's something you could ask.
Okay.
Some of that would be difficult necessarily for her to know, but...
Right. But, I mean, the fact that police and military were pulled out of there.
Correct.
Al-Jabiri would have had his men, but who were they fighting?
Correct. I think it's a fair point. And you would just know, just mechanically speaking, that some of this stuff looking into Al-Jabiri would be incredibly difficult to track from sort of a SIGINT source, and also potentially incredibly dangerous from a human element.
Right.
What? the head of ISIL counterintelligence is dangerous?
Might be. The Peshmerga may not necessarily be so inclined to...
What?
To enter Mosul and follow around the one guy whose job it is specifically to shoot them.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's an unreasonable ask potentially to task looking into some things if that is what you want to do. I would say you're on, I don't think Irene's ever going to be Jennifer's friend, but I think that you're on at least decent speaking terms.
I mean, tell her that we're looking at going into Mosul to track this guy.
I mean, you don't even have to go that far if you don't want to, because she is backtracking you as well. She already thinks you're up to no fucking good.
Ah.
In case you had forgotten that point.
No, I hadn't forgotten it.
But she'd called you guys out on your shit.
You think we could have, I can't think of his name. The tech guy.
Al Rabini,
thank you.
The NSA guy.
Do a little backtracking on her.
I mean, I don't know why we couldn't.
Yeah. I that's not.
Make a roll. We got to make at least one roll.
You don't have to.
So,
like I said, part of this
you can talk to Roy, my NSA contact, and get background deets on old Irene.
Yeah. You could. That's definitely something you could do if you're looking for pressure points.
I fucking love that.
It's an option.
That's great.
Can we have Landry start working with the Peshmerga to get us into Mosul and set up a safe house, set up contacts inside of Mosul?
I think if I remember our last interaction with the Peshmerga correctly, Cody was warning that it was, you know, these rat lines are incredibly tenuous, that it only takes, you know, only a couple people go, and that the Peshmerga would not be so inclined to send people through these rat lines, am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, no, it's something that you want to consider very carefully. In fact, this is something that Gwen would be interested in, whether or not you want to involve him or not. Just, you guys are agents, so some of this stuff you're going to know from the book. I could just tell you straight up that you would know, right? You start talking about, are you going in covertly? Are you using some, you know, clandestine tactics? Are you using military assets? Are you leveraging human assets?
Okay, covert and clandestine. What, you're making a distinction there. I need to...
So clandestine would be sort of... I mean, clandestine would be... I was trying to think of the phrase for you. Clandestine would be walking in between the raindrops. You don't need to use any of your assets. You're using all your desk assets to not be noticed.
Okay.
Period.
Whereas covert, you're hidden in and amongst them.
Correct. You're authorized. You're able to go in. You have paperwork. You walk up to the front door and say, you know, multipass.
Right.
Corbin Dallas, multipass.
How would that work?
What?
Well, no, I guess it's not like a solid barricade line around Mosul.
Correct.
Yeah. So, okay, you can sneak, you can get into Mosul.
The rat lines is kind of like the covert aspect of it. Whereas I would think using our aliases to walk in the door like we are supposed to be there is the clandestine way.
Isn't it flipped?
Backwards.
Yeah.
Do I have it backwards? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if Cody's right, but based on what Cody said, it would be flipped. But
clandestine was completely hidden.
Right.
Know, and covert was blending in.
Correct. And if you'd like, I've just spoken so much today. You get Glancy's explanation in here, so I could give you that. It says, clandestine tactics involve operating in a way that prevents the enemy from detecting a team's presence at all. Covert tactics involve operating in a way that convinces the enemy that the team's presence is either authorized or does not pose a threat.
Interesting.
So pretending to be an old lady, showing your papers, being a part of the religious police, these would all be covert tactics. Clandestine would be para-dropping into the thing at night.
And hiding in the sewers.
Right. Yeah. It's likely that you're going to have to utilize
both
in some way. Yeah. If you'd like, since I did start reading up on this, there are four major methods that you would potentially enter Mosul. So the things that you would think about, and this, your characters are obviously obviously discussing this and have been discussing this. And you're,
right.
You're experts in the field. So I'm just giving you basic information. You could walk, which would be one great way to dodge literally fucking everything if you just walk through the desert. You could drive. You could try and task a helicopter. Or you could paradrop. Those would be the four major methods. One, literally walking through the desert. One, driving up to the front door and just going in. A helicopter, which would attract a fuck ton of attention, but you could basically fly, you know.
Exactly where we want to be, yep, potentially.
And jump off the side of a building and, you know, do that, you know. Or do an incredibly dangerous halo jump, which if you're not familiar with halo jumping, fucking dope as shit. If anybody listening to this or if you guys haven't, you should see the military perform halo jumps.
Give me
it's high altitude, low opening so that you're not seen on radar. So like they take you up to where you can't you fucking jump breathe.
With masks.
You oxygenate up
Did you watch which one was it? No,
Mission Impossible.
James Bond.
James Bond.
It was Tomorrow Never Dies, I think.
No, yeah.
The Halle Berry one.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, you literally, it's an extremely strenuous thing because they take you up to such a high altitude. You are exposed to situations with no oxygen. You have to breathe. I don't actually think you breathe oxygen on the way down, but I think you're in a high oxygenated atmosphere to the point where you drop, because once you drop, the pressure changes. And your pressure in your body changes because you fall so fast. You basically over-oxygenate your lungs and then you drop so fast. You basically have to exhale the whole way down, probably screaming, to try and keep from the pressure change on your body. You literally can get the bends like you can in diving because of the rapid stress change.
Yeah.
Because you're free falling at
terminal velocity.
You're falling at 9.8 meters per second squared. Like, and then the thing is that to avoid detection, you open your parachute like some absurd distance from the ground, just enough to keep you from breaking every bone in your body when you hit the ground.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. You don't show up on radar. Nobody sees you do it.
All these characters have parachuting.
They do.
Yeah.
Not all. Hastings does not.
Fuck. You would also know that being in the military, you would also know that a paradrop, like, you got to pull some goddamn strings. You're not going to be paradropped in there every week. You're going to be lucky if you can get a handful of people authorized. Like, that is you're talking about, you're not just borrowing an ISIL truck laying on the side of the road. You're taking a specific military team and a specific plane. And it would be easier for you guys to probably steal a helicopter than it would be, you know, to do a paradrop. But
we could, an option. A regular parachute would be easier. We could... I feel like there are certain risks walking across the desert, and I wonder how long it would take and if we could do it all at night. And I wonder if getting dropped a more reasonable distance to walk might be an option. You know, like get dropped a kilometer outside of Mosul and then walk the rest of the way.
On foot from Kirkuk to... So we've been talking a lot, and I didn't realize because I'd never really looked at this chart this way. Kirkuk to the war zone is about an hour driving. Through the war zone to Mosul is 2 hours of driving. So essentially, Kirkuk is a 3-hour drive from Mosul city limits. It's a 90-minute to a 2.5-hour helicopter flight. A paradrop's going to get you there real fast because terminal velocity.
Because you're jumping from about 15,000 feet.
It would
between 15,000 and 30,000 feet.
It would take you 12 hours to walk from Kirkuk to the war zone. To walk through the battlefield, you would estimate it would take you a full day, give or take.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking if we can get paradropped, but just like normal, parachuted in. A little closer.
I mean,
something to consider.
Normal parachuting in, they're going to see you.
See you.
Radar, and they're going to watch you float down, and they're going to shoot your ass before you get to the ground.
Well, that's why I was thinking several kilometers out. But yeah,
you got a lot of hopped hard on jihadis looking to shoot anything that is, you know,
not
haram. and a parachute's probably not one of theirs.
Right, right.
I would like to point out, just in case it becomes relevant, it is May now. The average low at night in Iraq is 59 degrees Fahrenheit. The average high in May is 91 degrees.
Wow. At night.
Welcome to the desert.
Yep. Yes. So there would be... Those would be kind of your inserts.
Okay, I'm sorry. What were the temperatures?
It's 59 at night and 91 degrees during the day.
Okay.
Fucking hot.
So you get what I'm, so how far out do you think we would need to drop in to not get, you know, jihadis taking pot shots at us?
I mean, think about the reaction that Al-Jabari's men had when you flew the drone over. You could see, you wouldn't know until you dropped. You know what I mean? Like, it would be hard to scout out that.
I got a different one. Small watercraft float down the river.
Float up the river?
Float down the river. Go to the north side and float down so that there's no motor. There's no nothing.
Interesting.
Into the city.
Just Rambo this shit.
Yes.
Now, I will say you probably want to look at your map, because one of the reasons why Mosul was the last stronghold of ISIL was because of how close it is to the border. I'm not sure how close Mosul actually is to the border, but they were using it as a corridor to Syria. I don't know what it was, but I knew
it's not that close.
Okay, fair enough.
That's about 80 kilometers.
Okay. Like I said, I don't know. I remember from the books I read that one of the reasons why Mosul was the last stronghold for ISIL in Iraq was because that they were falling back towards, I don't remember where the fuck it was. I had to look at a map.
No, if we...
Mosul's closer to Turkey.
Maybe it was Turkey? I don't remember where it was.
About the same. No, it's closer to Turkey.
No, I mean, if we came over to where Rassam's was and head north around Mosul, we could get to the Tigris up there and float down.
That is an option. You would still obviously potentially run into some things, but
right.
That'd be a different option. I would let you be able to play that.
Like military science or anything like that. Is that what obstacles does Jeff not know about that would present?
I would say the biggest obstacles is that if you take a watercraft, you are stuck with a watercraft. You know what I mean? If some jihadis are out fishing, you know what I mean? Like, you're stuck with your watercraft as a mode of transportation.
Okay.
Like that. That's just that.
It's kind of like a road that we can't leave.
Correct. It's like a train would be. I mean, you're on the track. You could get off and walk, but just you would have.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, I'm kind of following the satellite image of the Tigris into Mosul right now on Google Maps, and you know, even at its most narrow junction, it's 200 feet across, but there are points like here when you get close enough where there are literal barriers covering so I think it would be something where I think it would be a good point of egress. Is that the right word? To get in.
Ingress or egress? I think. Yeah, which one are you?
To get in.
Ingress.
But to a certain point and then get out and walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would be on foot after you get out of the boat.
Yeah. 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 But I don't think we'd want to go too far into the city on the river.
Something else that you might want to do, which you haven't done yet, which Jeff might want to take into his notes for next time. You've not set up exactly, I don't think, what your cover identities are. Let me look at those cover identity things again.
The initial two or the one for Mosul?
I don't think you guys have done either, if I'm honest.
Well, I wasn't sure what we needed to do for the ones for Mosul.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're coming from the north, does it make sense if your paperwork says you should be coming from the south?
I have no idea.
Well, that's just what I'm tossing out there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what level of details we need on our paperwork.
Like I said, you've got paperwork. Each agent has paper supporting multiple identities, each under a single name. These include a citizen of the Islamic State residing in Mosul, an inspector from Al-Hizba or the all-female Al-Khanza Brigade, an officer of Amin al-Dakili, a unit of the Secret Service responsible for maintaining law and order, an officer of Amin al-Askari, a unit of the Secret Service in charge of reconnaissance and special operations, assigned from Raqqa to Mosul. That's what I was going to see. Where is Raqqa? Because some of your cover identities are Raqqa, R-A-Q-Q-A, which I believe is on the side that you're talking about boating from.
I'm looking right now.
It is not.
Okay.
It is just north of Baghdad.
So then my concern that where I as a handler would try and fuck you, Jeff, is if you said, I'm coming...
Well, when I put it like, so they're saying Raqqa is a, I don't know.
Yeah.
Raqqa, on, at least on Google Maps, literally looks like it's, wouldn't even be considered almost, well, maybe like a county in size at best.
This is the for interesting scale, where a bunch of white dudes in Indiana don't understand exactly the geography of Iraq.
Well, for scale, I mean, we're talking like, damn it, where'd my map go?
I thought Raqqa was to the north. Raqqa is really, really important to
ISIS. What's the name, or how do you spell it?
R-A-Q-Q-A.
I mean,
it's, yeah, there are a couple of different instances of that as a naming convention. There's Al Raqqa and there's Raqqa.
Raqqa, Syria.
Yeah.
Syria would be to the north. No, maybe not.
Hey, you know what, guys?
Raqqa.
Hey, at least we may be average motherfucking white boys from Indiana, but we can point out Syria on a map, which is better than like 99% of Americans.
I don't know if I could get close. I don't know if I know exactly which nation Syria is, just looking at a blank map with no description.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yes, I think, I imagine in this case, they're saying Raqqa, Syria. Not Raqqa.
No, they are spelled different.
R-A-Q-Q-A is what it says in the book for Syria.
R-A-Q-Q-A-H is what it says on here for Syria.
That's what I got too.
Yep. I'm just reading it out of the book. Raqqa in Syria was a major stronghold for ISIL, which is why I am thinking it's the Raqqa in Syria.
Okay, if Raqqa, that's the case,
in Iraq is directly or almost directly south. It's south, right in between Mosul and Kirkuk.
Interesting. I believe you.
Mosul, Kirkuk, Raqqa.
Interesting.
Fudging it and act like it's from Syria will definitely be to our benefit.
It would. I think that's the hard part, is that it is, it's a little ambivalent. I mean, and it's just something about, culture in the Middle East in terms of naming conventions that we are all learning. All it says is that these IDs are made out as officials from outside of Mosul in order to avoid encountering individuals who are familiar with the Mosul staff of these internal security apparati.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know if we want to go boating, bro. Just everywhere I look along the river, it's like people with guns just
in barbed wire, little barbed wire, yeah.
Just wide open, just. We're on the boat, guys. Worth it. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't hate the idea, Jeff. It sounds like a very cool spy thing. I don't know the logistics of it. I will look into it, though, if you decide that is your plan.
Well, I mean, going down a river that size in the middle of the night.
With no lights,
the sound of the river around you. Nobody's going to see you unless they shine a light on you and...
He has a point.
Yeah.
I agree.
Jeff has never done some shady shit in his younger years.
Oh, never, ever.
Involving rivers and or creeks.
Lakes.
Yeah, it's just, it's fun to think about, like, where we would enter north of Mosul, like, how far north.
There's good chance that we would be right along Nineveh and the university as some of the first places we would run into.
No.
No? I thought it was to the northeast.
It is to the northeast.
It is
off the river a kilometer or two.
Oh, okay. I thought you said three blocks.
Well, it's about, the thing about Nineveh is Nineveh's huge.
Gotcha.
So it's like.
Here's Nineveh.
You're not really angled towards me.
Here's Nineveh.
Okay. Ooh.
Shit.
Good talk.
There's Nineveh.
Okay.
There's the Tigris.
Got ya.
Up here is where we would have to come in.
Right.
So we'd have a long ass way to go down that river.
Got ya.
To get off at Nineveh.
Well, we also have to think about how we're going to exfil from Mosul.
Put in a retainer with our spec ops to airlift us out.
We're gonna call in our old SEAL Team 6, huh? To get shot the fuck down.
If they're shooting at them, they're not shooting at us.
We had to pay them a fuck ton of money just to get them to go to
a place. How much money do we even have left? Shit.
Not a lot. Just by inching it with this piece of paper on my scale here, Schroeder, to get into like central, Mosul,
by my,
it's like 15 kilometers.
By my fuck you Grady math, we've got $58,400 left. Cause I just remembered this much money, fuck you Grady, this is what we have left.
We were also talking moving some antiquities to make a little bit more money.
We did talk about that.
Which I think is a fantastic idea. I'm here for the crimes.
Yeah, there's a few people who have at least some criminology. Criminology and archaeology, I
you
think.
You could fence stuff if you wanted.
Yeah.
You would need stuff to fence.
We talked about fencing stuff for the guys that we helped steal to begin with.
Yeah. Because they're like, oh, I don't know what to do with this shit. Like, what are they going to do with it? We'll take fucking 35%.
Oh, by the way, please come save us when we're in the middle of Mosul.
I mean, we're the ones that got them the money to begin with.
Yeah, dude, if you sell this antiquity for $50,000 and then hand them $35,000, they're going to be like, thanks, man. That's 15 grand for us. Hell, we could.
We'll knock it down to 25 if you'll save us a spot on a helicopter.
Yeah, brother. Yeah. Money talks. Lots of money.
Now, I do remember looking into it at least a little bit. I don't think it's in Iconoclast, but I'm trying to remember now. I know that some of the larger assets, private PMCs don't have as readily available to them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, like, if a military grade chopper is something that PMCs would have.
They're going to be flying in old Halo or in old. I just lost it.
Hueys.
Yeah.
No, they're going to be flying in that fucking gyrocopter from Mad Max. And that's the best you're going to get.
As long as it's got that dude piloting it.
That dude.
How much can we get fencing a handmade antique mitten koozie?
Second favorite TV wizard of all time.
Oh, that was in the Seventh Son.
He was in Legends of the Seeker.
Yeah. The first book in that series was Seventh Son.
The first book in that series is Wizard's First Rule.
Was it?
Yeah.
What am I thinking of?
I have no idea, but it's not what I'm talking about.
I do know the series that you're talking about, though.
Seeker. A direct ripoff of Wheel of Time, if we'd like to bring that up to Schroeder. I once met a fellow Wabash man, you both would know, Matt Goodrich, who yelled at me for 45 minutes about how I was reading absolute trash when I was reading Wizard's First Rule and that it was nothing but a direct ripoff of Wheel of Time, to which I said, well, it's got this in it. And he's like, yeah, just like in the fucking Wheel of Time. Over and over and over. He's like, oh, guess what? You got a bunch of like evil priests that like torture people? Yeah, like in the fucking Wheel of Time.
Ah, goody.
And like, as I went on to describe it, I then started looking it up and realized he was absolutely correct that it largely stole major concepts of the Wheel of Time.
I mean, literally was the same thing for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Did you hear that conversation from me and AJ yesterday morning?
No.
We were talking about different things and I was like, yeah, but that just stole from this and this just stole from that. And he was like, well, what about that one kid or what that one thing, Aragorn or whatever it was? And I was like, you mean the guy, you mean the guys who rode dragons who were all evil and there were 13 of them and they were called the Forsworn instead of the Forsaken, and there's literally the same number, and they rode basically evil Nazgul like from Lord of the Rings and like just went down all the numbers. It was like the kid was 19 when he wrote the book. He stole from everyone.
Yes, he did.
He really did.
It was a ripoff of Star Wars.
Yes.
It was
because they were basically like a Sith organization. Like the lore.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it was Luke and Obi-Wan.
Yeah, 100%.
Through the first book.
Yeah.
But what I read, that's one of the reasons why I've been so stoked to read some of this appendix and literature, because these guys, Lord of the Rings wasn't the end all be all at the time that most of these guys were writing. Mm-hmm. So you get drastically different non Lord of the Rings inspired fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, Elric is fantastic. It's nothing Tolkien-esque at all.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser, way more of a D&D party than fucking Lord of the Rings. Like, just great. I fucking love Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser because they just do dumb shit. Like, it's just half their adventures are because they got drunk and ran out of money and now need to do a job. Yeah. They yell at the person who gives them the job. Much like players yell at a DM to play the story. And then sometimes they just run away. They're like, nah, fuck this. This shit's scary. We're out of here. It's like, there's no courageous at all. There's a great one where I think it's the Mouser has been captured and Fafhrd throws his voice in a falsetto and is dressed up as a ghost to scare off the people. I'm like, that's shit you do in D&D. Like
some Scooby-Doo ass shit right there.
Aragorn is not running in with a Nazgul hood on to scare the shit out of people. Woo! And the Uruk-hai run off.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of shit Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser are doing. I'm like, I'm here for this.
Yeah.
I am here for this.
Well, sorry, history chose Tolkien. So
don't get me wrong, great. Tolkien's great, mm-hmm. but not everything needs to rip off Tolkien.
That's why I like Discworld.
Discworld is also very good. You know, nobody talks about it anymore, but I really enjoyed a lot of it. Dragon Riders of Pern.
Yeah, I never read a whole lot of it, but I do. I did enjoy what I did read.
It's fun. It's fun.
Dragon Riders. I know Lisa read a ton of those when she was a kid.
But like, there's plenty of fantasy that you can do outside of being strictly Tolkien.
There was another series that she got me to read. Pierce Anthony wrote it, and it was all aspects of this book was about the personification of time. This was about the personification of war and death and God and everything like that. I only ever read time, but it was very, very good.
I know we took a fantasy literature. I took a fantasy literature course in college as my freshman tutorial. And we read one of the things that we read because we read a diverse thing. We started with like Conan the Barbarian, but we moved on to some other things. The Book of Jereg, I never hear talked about a lot.
It's not one I've heard of.
It's essentially hard boiled detective novel, but it's in a fantasy setting. He has a pet dragon and there's like half dragons and like there's magic involved, but he's like the human detective in a world controlled by various races of dragon, different like clan houses.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's the outsider who's like coming in to like solve murders and like it's very, very cool. Solid stuff.
The only fantasy canon I accept is Dr. Seuss. So he is the creator of all that is great. The Vipper of Vip, Fox with Socks. You know how many fish there are? There's two red and there's two blue. Is that right? I don't
even know. It's one fish, two fish, red fish.
Fuck.
You're gonna have to work on that dad thing, man.
God damn it. Can you tell I've been reading these books? Yeah.
Not very well. Not very, apparently. Yeah. Not
very. I feel bad for your oldest.
One fish, two fish, some red fish.
There's some fish.
Well, Spencer works. Opens up another bottle of box.
You have to finish the title with a slur. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
It's like fucking, oh God, what's the actor's name who was doing the champagne commercial and was totally sloshed? Oh, fuck. Orson Welles.
Oh,
yeah.
Champagne, a premium quality champagne. It's like Jesus Christ, come on now. I do like that phrase though. It's going to get lost in the laughter. But Spencer opening up another bottle of box wine might be my favorite thing I've said today.
Hey, there's no shame in it, people. Inflation's up. You gotta buy smart. Gotta buy in bulk, people.
What other things do you want to discuss?
Who are we gonna send in?
That like is an excellent question.
That is because we are taking it.
Jennifer, I think, should be.
I'm gonna make
definitely.
Gonna make a list.
I'm gonna make a list.
Check it twice. Because this is the thing with how difficult it is to go in. Are you going to go in, come out, go in, come out? You gonna go in and stay in until the job is done?
Oh yeah, that's what she said.
Soaking.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think it's
a stand-up bit.
So Cody has a good point there, and I think a lot of it has to do with whether or not we're able to establish our own safe house, like a home base within Mosul. If we can get a safe house, then the prospect of going in and out and sending different teams at different times is more viable. But if we don't have a home base once we're in there, going in and out, I think, is not the best way to do it.
My vote is Jennifer and Captain Dan.
Captain Dan.
Just the two.
Oh, that man, that's gonna be hot. Yeah, they're definitely going to have a love interest. And come up in the third act. It's going to be great. No, these people are too broken to love. they're all shells of humans.
Dan's going to get stuck in Namath's hand, Jennifer. That's your love.
I love you so much, Jennifer.
I just can't quit you.
Oh, man. I really don't With Cody gone, let's talk shit about Cody. No, I mean, I don't get a sense of how well we're doing or if we're on the right track or not. I really don't. I think
he's right. Something has to be going on with Nineveh.
You think I'm right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Schroeder is correct. Something has to be going on with Nineveh. Mm-hmm.
If there's nothing going on in Nineveh, it's a hell of a good red herring.
There's been too many references to the sun and the moon for me to ignore moon phases.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. We got 2 days.
I don't know that we want to go in the dead of night in 2 days on the river where we can't get the fuck run from the goddamn thing.
No, I think that we need to scope out the place from a distance.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how feasible that is because I don't know what Nineveh really looks like now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would be the best time to... I was like, oh, well, maybe we actually need to be there when it's there because that's our best chance to catch it is when it's fully
we
formed.
We don't have anything to put it in.
Right. That was my next thought is like...
Oh, yeah.
Well, what can we put it in, number one? And number two, what can we use to like magically simulate
we can make
sunlight
a
or moonlight?
Yeah.
Like what is an artifact or a device or something that can... Because if sunlight, moonlight hurts it, if we want to ambush it, what can mimic that? I don't know.
Nothing. Because I have a feeling that it's specific that it's light from the sun. I can't imagine literally a fluorescent light bulb is going to do the same
thing. Oh, no, I was talking about I was mostly thinking about magic shit.
Yeah. Well, we only know how to make the Elder Sign. We don't have any other magic shit.
And Sloan said that the Elder Sign is not going to stop it.
Correct.
I forget the line that Grady used, but...
I believe Glancy said, it's great to lock a door, but makes a piss poor flak jacket.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have the ritual to make an elder sign.
Correct.
Is it just the one person who knows how to do it, or has it been taught to us by that person?
I think you were going to look into it, but I don't think anybody's been taught yet.
We had discussions of Mary teaching other people. I think that process started because if I remember correctly, Mary went to Baghdad after she came back.
Which one's Mary?
Mary Olson.
Yeah, Olson's in Baghdad.
I believe it's Hastings and Olson in Baghdad.
Yep, and Kazim went to Greece.
Correct.
Because I do remember we were going to look at rules for learning magic because it's weird.
Correct. No point knowing how to aim a missile if the only person that knows how to do it gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't the way to have fun, son. That ain't the way to have fun, son.
Our title track, Mama Told Me Not to Come, composed by friend of the podcast Ian Shannon, with additional vocals by Lucas Patterson and Cody Grady. You can find more of Ian's work at sleepfortheweary.com. Like what you heard? Check out more episodes online at rancorsbrothel.com, YouTube, or anywhere you can download podcasts. Enjoy talking nerdy? Follow the podcast with other listeners on the Fans of the Rancors Brothel Facebook page. Most of all, keep circulating the tapes. Much love, everybody.
What it is, I don't wanna see no more.